Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Potter's beat writer, sitting next to my boss, Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm back in town. Padres are playing the Dodgers. Ryan, where would you like to start?
Let's talk about Seattle real quick. This was Padres come back from a trip to Milwaukee and Seattle. Milwaukee trip did not go great, and the Seattle trip did. A sweep from a team that suddenly seems to be hitting, getting at least some improvement from their starting pitching. This is more in line with the team that we were seeing in the first month of the season, don't you think, Kevin?
It is. And like, especially, and even though they did start out hitting well, but not winning, when I say hitting well, by the way, I mean sort of like they did on Friday night. They won 2-0 on Friday night. They had 15 line drives. They had 10 balls. They hit 100 miles an hour harder. That had stopped happening for like 3 weeks. It was astonishing. Mm-hmm. And so even though they only scored 2 runs, they felt really good about that. And then they come out, 7 runs the next night, 8 runs yesterday. They're scoring early in games. It is possible to do. And they swept them. It wasn't exactly, I think we were talking about how bad the Milwaukee series went and how poorly the offense has been doing. We were talking about that yet again before the Seattle series. I made some comment like, yeah, they're going to go in there and, you know, facing 3 top pitchers and they're going to, really score a lot of runs. They kind of did. Yeah. I thought Friday was their best game. And like Craig Stammen said after he's off, that was like the fewest amount of runs we could have scored hitting that well.
Right.
Little analogy that I didn't put in the newsletter is it's like when you are playing golf and you say, that's the highest I could have shot with how well I played. You know, how like when you feel like you should have shot a 65. And I'm like, Craig, I think that you are in a different golf world than the rest of us because, you know, he's a scratch golfer. Like the other day he played in Milwaukee, it was like the third time he's played since the start of spring training and shot like a 65.
Oh, my God.
So,
wow. Yeah, I mean, I was impressed not only with the offense, and I think we should talk about Gavin Sheets a little bit. Kevin, I said this to you when we were in Mexico City. I probably said this to you in spring training. What a find this guy has been for them. There wasn't a spot for him on the Chicago White Sox ? And he comes to San Diego and plays out of position a year ago and hits well enough, is now essentially penciled in every day, is basically their starting first baseman, has become not only a really good defensive first baseman, but a middle of the order bat who just to me looks like he's out of central casting for what you want in a baseball player. Big, strong, left-handed guy. And he has been mashing the last couple of games.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because it's like plays hard too. Yeah. Like it's the old, could have been out of the 60s with his Letterman jacket. Look, at $1.6 million, he was an incredible bargain for what he was last year. And he's better this year. I want to say better discipline, consistent. He's at least what he was last year. He's Gavin Sheets plus. And at $4 million, he's a bargain. I mean, what he's done already, it is amazing. The fact that he sustained from last year, showing it's real, because that's hard to do.
Yes.
And then has improved in some ways. And now what they're starting to do is, because Ty France is the superior, even though you're right, Gavin Sheets gotten better at first base, they're starting to get Sheets and France in when they can together. That requires Sheets to go back to left field. I mean, it's just like this guy will do anything. He can do anything. And he does it pretty well. Even has 3 stolen bases this year.
Yeah. I mean, OPS of 896. You'll take that.
It was, subtract 206, whatever that was. Before this road trip, it was like 690.
Wow.
It's 896 now. Like that. He raised his batting average 53 points in 6 games. No player this year, I think it's a 2177 OPS that he has in these past 6 games. No player has had a 6-game stretch like that. Obviously, we know that, it's kind of one of those baseball stats that's like really obscure where it's, has all these caveats. But he is the only player in Major League history to have three-run homers in the 9th inning. In a season,
and he
did it in a month, he's on a heater. We're not saying this is the player that he's going to be, stats, but your original premise of the bargain.
And again, on a team when so many guys are making $30 million or $25 million, you need some guys to produce. And we look at it, every championship team, every World Series champion has 3 or 4 guys like this. players who post career best years, who come from relative obscurity to be a big part of your team.
He's the guy who, and it'll be true of anybody who's on this team if they were to win the World Series this year, but Gavin Sheets will be the guy that like is the quintessential, he'll never have to buy a drink in this town. Like no matter what happens the rest of his career, he'll be Holy Sheets in San Diego. And like, you know, people will remember him forever.
Yes. Yes. One of my kids asked me yesterday if they sell Gavin Sheets jerseys. I said, you know, that's a great question.
Here's the answer. If they didn't, they do now.
They should. Yes. Gavin Sheets is hitting .525 over his last seven games, .325 over his last 15 games, and .276 over his last 30 games. Trending definitely in the right direction. An OPS of a, what, 1.211 in the last seven games from Gavin Sheets. Can we talk about pitching for a minute?
To me,
the story of yesterday, more so than the bats, more so than completing the sweep, more so than Gavin Sheets, was Lucas Giolito. Mm-hmm. This was a guy who looked lights out until the very end when he was incapable of throwing a strike. But graded on a curve compared to what they were expecting, this has to be a major win for them.
Well, one hit batter, which was really a walk, it came on ball four, but over five innings, 59 pitches. And then he has to sit for 20, 25 minutes. Right. And I mean, if it was his 12th start, you'd be like, man, he should have been better prepared for that or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a real shame. He really put him in jeopardy or whatever. That happens to a lot of pitchers.
Yeah.
His first start back to do that for five innings. And then, I mean, couldn't have been better. And I agree with you. I think that you could go, because of the importance of Lucas Giolito and the thinness of their rotation, you could say that was the story of yesterday. Given that all 3 days, I think the story of the Seattle series was the offense. Absolutely. What Lucas Giolito did was magnificent, and it was exactly what they needed.
Right. Watching him and watching the way he works counts, the way he pitches, his just stature on the mound, it reminds me a lot of Nick Pivetta. Well, what are the differences there between just in terms of arsenal?
The changeup is unbelievable.
Right.
Nick works from ahead, and I'm not saying that Lucas Giolito wanted to do this, but I was blown away. I've rarely seen a guy go five scoreless innings, one hit, one walk, and he was like at three balls like every time. But he's got that changeup, get him out of that trouble, and a lot of pop-ups, not a lot of strikeouts. But yeah, they're a big, tall guy, but he's a little bit more of a mountain of a man than Nick. Doesn't throw even as hard as Nick does. Now, his velocity's down, and who knows. But he is a pitcher.
Yes.
As Nick is.
Yes. You can never have too many of those. And even we can talk, somebody like Griffin Canning, I think, quote unquote, pitches as well as anybody in their rotation. At some point, you need to pair that with results, obviously.
Yes. Yes. And I think Griffin Canning, and who knows, hey, what's going to happen Lucas Giolito's next start, right? Like, you know, this doesn't mean this is what he's going to do every time. Griffin Canning's probably going through, first off, Griffin Canning is a good major league pitcher. Mm-hmm. Is he the guy that he was last year for the Mets for 16 starts before getting hurt? I guess we'll find out. But that's what we all were kind of like, oh, yeah, they got Griffin Canning, and he's going to be a guy who gives you five, six all the time. We'll see.
Well, and again, he was never that guy before last year, right? So the question is that an aberration or is this an evolution in terms of who he's becoming?
You certainly have seen for portions of his first two starts, for basically almost all of his first start and portion of his second, that he has that ability.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a pitcher, as you said. His last start, that's something that every single pitcher in the history of the game, well, I didn't watch, you know, I bet you even the Cy Young had one where you just didn't have it that day.
Right, absolutely. Padres-Dodgers, three-game series starting tonight. Dodgers are 29-18 in first place by a half a game in the National League West. Ahead of the Padres, 28-18. The Dodgers are coming. They've won five in a row. They just swept the Angels and outscored the Angels 31-3. Shohei Ohtani was struggling at the plate, isn't anymore. This is, again, the team to beat in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and they don't get any sort of break where the Dodgers have these injuries in their starting rotation, Glasnow, Snell. Doesn't matter because who's coming up in their rotation is, and you'll go over it, but Yamamoto, Sheehan, and Ohtani. So they're seeing who they're seeing and who they would see, you know, that this was a series that really, really mattered. You knew that Ohtani wasn't going to keep, you know, he's going to figure out how to pitch and hit at this level, you know, like put them in sync because he's pitching now like a real pitcher, right? And so you can't help but think, gosh, man, that's just a lot. I know he's Superman and everything, but you knew that he was going to. Okay, so it happens right before they face the Padres.
Yes, at Petco Park. Well, here's the deal. You're going to have to play them at some point, right? I'm surprised. It's funny. It's the end of May. This is the first time they've played each other.
And I think, I know that the next series, I believe at the end of June, is also at Petco. So you play the two here, and then you play one at the beginning of July, and I think one in September in L.A.
Wow. Tonight's matchup, Monday night, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, 3-3 with a 3.6 ERA. It's Michael King, 3-2 with a 2.6 ERA. Raise your hand if you thought Michael King would have a lower ERA than Yoshinobu Yamamoto this year. Okay, Kevin, good for you. King is coming off a really good start. He's allowed two runs or less in 7 of his 9 starts this year. Padres have only won 4 of his starts, making him sort of the anti-Randy Vasquez there. He has not faced the Dodgers since 2024. When he went 2-0 with an ERA of 3.
Yeah, he was going to do it last year, and that's when he went on with the knee, went on the IL with the knee.
Right. Yep. Right. Interesting matchup. I mean, to me, Yamamoto, again, hasn't maybe lived up to the promise in terms of what they paid him, but the Dodgers have a way of money doesn't matter to them.
Look, this guy's a really good pitcher. Right. Yeah, like $360 million or whatever it was. It's like, okay, all right. I mean, yeah.
At least he's pitching. They're paying Tyler Glasnow and Blake Snell an awful lot of money to not pitch.
Yep. No, this guy will go out and give you 5, that's for sure. Now, the Padres have seen him pretty well. He's also had good starts against them, for sure. But they've seen him pretty well.
Yep. Tuesday, the aforementioned Emmett Sheehan, 3-1 with a 4.5 ERA. Going up against Griffin Canning, 0-2 with an ERA over 10. To me, Canning is the guy who I'm watching now in his next start. You know, it sort of was trending in a bad direction. Yeah. Things bottomed out in Milwaukee. See what he's got here against a really good Dodgers offense.
Needs to pitch like that first game where like the changeup, the slider, like, I mean, this guy was just dotting and those were just magnificent pitches. And that's what's got to be against this lineup.
Absolutely. And then Wednesday, take the afternoon off work, Kevin.
That's a later game.
Oh, you're right. It is a later game. That's right. Never mind. Don't take the afternoon off or do it anyway. Do it anyway. Yeah. Shohei Ohtani, 3-2 with an ERA of
pregame Ohtani against Vasquez.
0.82. Zero. His ERA starts with a 0 going up against Randy Vasquez, who has a 5-1 record with a 2.68 ERA. The Dodgers will be heavy favorites in this one. I, for one, am excited to see Shohei Ohtani pitch against the Padres. Not something that's happened very much.
The Padres have found a way to win those games. They have not done so well against the Skubal, Mizorowski, Ohtani. That's your true aces, right? We talk about an ace, right? Like Michael King is the ace of as good as Michael King is, he hasn't proved himself as an ace yet.
Right.
But when we're talking ace, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but they found a way to win those games. Yeah. Not Skubal, obviously, but like they just get them out. Make sure you get what you got to do is cobble together some runs if you can. If not, run up his pitch count.
Yep. For those listeners of ours who are going to be pregaming Wednesday, you could probably win a drink off your friends by telling them this fact. Shohei Ohtani's career ERA against the San Diego Padres, 9.
Whoa.
9. And here's why. In 2023, when he was with the Angels, he allowed 5 runs in 5 innings against them. It was like a holiday weekend, right? Was it like July 4th weekend or something here?
I think so.
Memorial Day?
Yeah, I'm trying to,
something like that. And then last year, in his first start back, he pitched 1 inning against the Padres, allowing 1 run.
That's right. First start back.
Yes, career ERA.
That's what I was thinking because I totally forgot about the Angels game. I'm thinking, was it that one game?
Yes.
So he has given up a run an inning.
This is what money gets you in the year 2026 in Major League Baseball. Let's talk about the Dodgers injury report just for a second. The Dodgers, again, for my money right now, best team in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the hottest team in baseball.
And for their money.
The best team in baseball. Blake Snell on the IL. Jack Dreyer on the IL. Tyler Glasnow on the IL. Edwin Diaz on the IL. Tommy Edman. Kike Hernandez. Ben Kasperius, Landon Knack, Gavin Stone, Bobby Miller, Evan Phillips. I just named 12 guys who'd make up a pretty darn good baseball team. If you put them on there, all of those guys are on the IL. Just like the last 2 years, the Dodgers place and have a lot of guys on the injured list, and it doesn't seem to slow them down.
This, to me, is the absolute greatest illustrator of the advantage they have by having the TV deal they do, by having parlayed, and kudos to them, for Yamamoto, Ohtani above all else, Sasaki, and turning that into a cottage industry that brings in probably 10 times what the Padres get from TV, and they get 10 times from that their TV. So that what I'm saying is all of their money gets them this, that injuries that would devastate another team, if they had invested in Tyler Glasnow, if they had invested in Edwin Diaz, if they had invested in Blake Snell, in one of those guys, and those guys go down, 29 other teams devastated. And the Dodgers just go, okay. And here's where I think that a lot of people get it wrong. They get it wrong by getting it right about the Dodgers develop as well as anybody in the majors too. Mm-hmm. Who else develops? Let's say the Rays. Mm-hmm. The Rays could withstand this?
No.
The injuries? No.
No.
It's the Dodgers' money that allows them to withstand this. They are, because they develop well. Kudos to them for developing. The disparity is in what they can do when injuries hit them.
Yeah.
And I just think kudos to the Dodgers. Way to go. I mean, if you were a Dodger fan, or if it was the Padres, you'd be like, man, it's a great team to cover. Right. Oh, you've been great. But this is the one where it's like, man, how is it ridiculous that they can be this good with that IL, and they had it last year and the year before too. Yeah.
And it takes away the margin, or how about this? The Padres have no margin for error, right? If the Padres sign
other teams,
right? If the Padres sign a player to, let's say Xander Bogaerts, to a decade-long contract that promises him hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, at some point that bill is going to come due, and it's not going to be good for them, right? At some point.
But you hope it paid off in the beginning.
In the beginning, right. Correct.
And when he doesn't perform.
Right. When he doesn't perform, you're stuck, right? Right. Can't go get another shortstop. You're already paying your shortstop X, right? The Dodgers.
You're paying your shortstop X.
Exactly. If you're the Dodgers and you're wrong, and look, these teams figure out one way or another pretty quickly if they're wrong on a guy. When the Dodgers are wrong on a guy, they just go get another guy.
Right.
And write a check to the guy who they were wrong on.
Right.
That is different from, I would say, I'd put the Mets in that category, maybe, but the Dodgers are an outlier in Major League Baseball in their ability to just say, and now you go away.
And so they develop from within, and they're not wrong about guys very often. So kudos to them.
Yep.
But they have the ability to do that as well. The Mets, and this is where people will look at the money didn't buy the Mets. That's not what I'm arguing.
Right.
I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that, like, it does allow that if the Mets were as good as the Dodgers are at developing and identifying free agent talent, then the Mets would have the same advantage as the Dodgers.
Right.
Okay, fine. The Yankees could, right? Their owner isn't as rich. Their owner is Yankee rich.
Right.
But yes, they could do it too because their TV deal. The Phillies can do it too. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers happen to be the best of the rich guys.
Yes. And again, being rich, when you develop these players, you can then afford to keep these players. Not like if you're, say, I don't know, the Tampa Bay Rays, right? They develop players and then they trade them for other players.
And look. I think we shouldn't turn this into a CBA or a finances right. thing, but I'm not saying the Rays do everything right. And I think it stinks that the Rays and the Marlins and the Brewers, mm-hmm. who, by the way, do a really good job too.
They do.
We could include them in that conversation, but that they do that and the things they value are cheap, right? Like mm-hmm. they play a certain kind of way in order to win. They develop and they draft and develop a certain kind of player to win cheaply. Mm-hmm. And I think they probably should spend, not probably, they should spend more money. Right. But that doesn't make what the Dodgers are doing any less egregious. And I'm not blaming the Dodgers. No. I'm the system of baseball. It's just, it's wild.
Right. And if you look at it from the other end, right, you're the Los Angeles Dodgers. You lead the league in attendance every year, don't you?
With the largest stadium, by the way.
With the largest stadium. You have the world's most unfair television contract. It pays you...
I don't know.
Is it 10 times?
10 times
what the Padres are making. maybe you do owe it to your fans to spend a pile of money to bring in as many big name guys. Yeah. I don't begrudge them for doing it. I begrudge the system that has allowed it, because I don't think that if the San Diego Padres attempted to do this, say, hey, we're going to pay Shohei Ohtani a lot of money in his 50s. I don't think if the Padres or another team tried to do it, I'm not sure it would have been allowed.
Well, you would wonder if they had the money to do it.
Right.
The Dodgers did have to show they had the money. I know this is the deferred contract, whatever. Okay. Right. But they had money. Like the Padres did, by the way. And it has cost them. Peter Seidler leveraged a lot of stuff, and they, he didn't really have that money. And Peter Seidler should and will have a statue at Petco Park. He showed us what was possible.
Right.
Long time guy like you, there was a certain acceptance you had. This is what the Padres can do. I'm so happy when 2006 happens and all that. Peter Seidler showed us, no, Peter Seidler and AJ Preller.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. The Padres can do things just like the big boys. Love that attitude. No, you can't.
No, you can't. For years growing up here, our listeners know this, grew up in San Diego, a Padre fan, have been paying attention to the Padres every day of my life since I knew who they were. For decades, the Dodgers were the Lakers and the Padres were the Clippers, right? Clippers have gotten better. Clippers are spending money. Clippers have a new state or a new arena, and it's great. They'll never outspend the Lakers. And so you got to figure out how to do it, right? You got to find an angle. And I think the Padres have found an angle, which is try to make the wild card and try to get hot. Try to get hot in a short term.
Have a team that can get hot.
Right.
Have a, they built with the bullpen. And the Padres have done an amazing job. They have brought in stars and they're spending.
Yeah.
Those stars need to perform. And now we can get back to baseball if you'd like. Because those stars need to perform.
Right, right. Well, here, I'm going to put you on the spot, actually.
Sure, you can put me on the spot. I figured it was about spot time.
Yeah, it is about spot time. We've gone a little long, but it's the Dodgers. So I'm not apologizing. Kevin, put you on the spot at the end of every episode. You're sitting next to me here. This may be our first ever live in-person episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Are the Padres pissed off at Eddie Vedder?
They're not pissed off at Eddie Vedder. They didn't like, or a segment of fans, right? There's a certain segment of vocal fans and some members of the organization, how in their face it was that Eddie Vedder was a Cubs fan. Who could have, was this a risk? Everyone knew Eddie Vedder was a Cubs fan.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a risk? Yes. But who could have predicted that when you decided to do this lighthearted, fun and charitable and then take advantage of promotion and start the Vedder Cup or make the Vedder Cup like a quote unquote real thing, that the Padres were going to end up playing at Wrigley Field and that Eddie Vedder was going to be there. I mean, full on Cubs regalia with all his boys singing the seventh inning stretch, right behind the plate, in the clubhouse with the Cubs. Like, and I will say this, when the Vedder Cup last year in Seattle, Eddie Vedder was there with his family, decked out in Mariner stuff, and seemed to really be enjoying himself. Didn't come to San Diego.
Sure didn't.
Wasn't wearing Padres gear.
Right.
No, that's like, well, whatever. I have no idea. Maybe at a concert.
Right.
I don't know. But like, it was like, okay, it's pretty clear. It goes like this. Cubs, Mariners, and then, oh, that's right. I went, where is Claremont? I grew up in San Diego. That's right. And his mom threw out the first pitch this year. So it's not like the Padres, while they don't mention Vedder Cup, I think you get struck by lightning if you work for the Padres and you mention Vedder Cup anymore. But it's not like they ignored it. They made their charitable contribution to his, and I couldn't pronounce it, but he's got a charitable contribution.
His charity of choice.
His charity.
Right.
His family member afflicted by this skin disease. And the Padres, made that, and they had, I think, one of the people out. His mom threw out the first pitch. Evidently, she lives here and is a Padres fan. But yeah, they weren't thrilled.
It's funny, and I would have.
They took the guitar home, from my understanding.
That's cool. That's cool. The thing that's weird to me, and this is one of those I never thought I'd be saying the sentence moments. I was in Chicago with you last year for that playoff series, and every day I'd look at the game notes, or you'd see him walking around, you'd be like, "Eddie Vedder again." Like, oh, who's singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game? Jeez. By the end of the weekend, I was sick of Eddie Vedder. If Eddie Vedder walked in front of us one more time on the concourse or on the field or whatever, I was going to puke. And it's funny because it's Eddie Vedder, a very, very important person for people like me of a certain age. His music
and very also important. By all accounts, a really nice guy.
Wonderful.
I don't think the Padres are not mad at Eddie Vedder. It just felt weird to them.
Yes.
A segment of the Padres and the Padres fans.
Right. I get that. I remember last year, one of my lasting memories from Wrigley Field was before the game, Mike Schilt, who's not exactly Mr. Social near a baseball game, talking with Eddie Vedder, with Eddie sitting behind the dugout or behind home plate. I thought that was kind of cool. I didn't know that Mike Schilt could have picked Eddie Vedder out of a crowd.
I don't know. Yeah, I'll just leave that.
Were you a Pearl Jam guy?
I mean, not like I wasn't a huge music guy, but you were not my age in the 90s without being very familiar with a lot of Pearl Jam songs. Wasn't my thing necessarily, right? I mean, clearly I was a gangster rap guy, but wasn't my thing. That dude can sing.
Yes.
And play the guitar, and I absolutely appreciate some of those songs. And like you said, they're anthems from our youth.
Yep. And I love that, you know, he's a Cubs fan. He's not a bandwagon Cubs fan.
No.
They were terrible for most of his life, and I don't begrudge him at all. Now that they're not terrible and they won a World Series, I don't begrudge him at all for flexing and coming out every big Cubs game. I think that's kind of a cool thing to do. Not like he's a Dodger fan, you know?
Love it. Absolutely love it. And look. I think it's cool when you go to Dodger Stadium and like Rob Lowe's there. I think he's like a real Dodger fan, right? Like, what's his name? Say Ken Jeong.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dr. Ken. Oh, yeah. Ken.
But like, yeah. So no problem. And I don't think that anybody is begrudges him or is mad at him. It's just an awkward thing to some people.
Yes. I get it. Kevin AC, big Mary Hart fan over here, aren't you? She goes to every Dodger game.
Yes. Could no longer pick her out of a lineup. There was a time when was it Entertainment Tonight?
Yeah, she's on TV every night. She is right there on the as you're watching from home.
Next to Scott Boras.
Yeah, she's on the right hand side as you're looking at home plate. Every Dodger game. Anyway, Kevin, thank you for coming over and christening my little office here.
This is great.
Yeah, it's very cool. He's met a cat. You know, so it's been a big day for both of us here. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.